Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. Oh, 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 oh,
oh. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock.
Merry Christmas and welcome to another edition of the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. My name is Jeff Westover, lead Puritan and first pilgrim of the Merry Forums, the world's finest Christmas community, on the longest ongoing celebration of Christmas online at MyMerryChristmas.com. 2020 is not only the strangest year of our lives, but also a special commemorative year for anyone with pilgrim and Puritan heritage, which is likely many of us born in these United States. As an avid family historian who has invested decades and thousands of dollars in ancestral research, I can vouch for the fact that 2020 is all about finding our Mayflower roots, being now 400 years since the arrival of that intrepid vessel to the shores of North America. That also makes it something of a fad in the world of podcasting, as folks everywhere are rushing to myth bust the facts of Mayflower life. We're going to do a bit of that of our own in this episode as it relates to the Pilgrim and Puritan Christmas. We begin with the question of what exactly is the difference between a Pilgrim and a Puritan. It is said that when John Smith celebrated his first Christmas in 1607 in the New World, he did it by drinking eggnog. Smith was a famous English explorer and a leader in the first settlement of Jamestown in 1607, a member of the Anglican Church. As Smith raised a toast to the New World with his eggnog in 1607, he was merely following centuries of English tradition born of wassailing. To wassail was to roam the neighborhood, sending good cheer to neighbors and greetings at Christmas time in the new year. We are not daily beggars that go from door to door, the words famously say. Like many traditions of Christmas, wassailing was a blended tradition, something borrowed, some historians say, from pagans who celebrated the winter solstice with the merriment of song and dance and with alcoholic drink. But like eggnog itself, there are various forms of wassailing. Some of it was innocent, and some of it clearly was not. Sometimes we hear this tune and words to it akin to "Here We Come a Caroling." Well, there's a big difference between wassailing and caroling. Those who would wassail, as they did go from door to door, might throw any kind of liquid into the wassail bowl, including spirits that would, well, elevate the energy and raucousness of their holiday celebration. Frequently in Old England, to wassail might include role-playing, the wearing of masks, the donning of clothes of the opposite sex, and perhaps even delving into wife-swapping and other promiscuous games as they went from door to door. Was John Smith's Christmas eggnog of Jamestown a moment where he let his hair down, so to speak? Well, probably not. But as an Anglican, he knew well the traditions of Christmas celebrations in the Church of England. They were not exactly religious, but religion was not really the reason why the Pilgrims founded Jamestown in the first place. It was the opportunity that was presented in the New World, a means of expanding British trade, and for adventurous individuals, Anglican pilgrims like John Smith, well, it was their opportunity to get rich in the process. These pilgrims thus are fairly far removed from the more celebrated Puritans of Thanksgiving fame in New England, who came a few years later, and, well, the evidence was first in their songs and what they said about them. The Puritans of New England were not like the Pilgrims of Jamestown. Yes, they were pilgrims in the sense that they too were immigrants from a faraway land, but the Puritans did not go a-wassailing. They went a-caroling, also a door-to-door tradition, but their song might have sounded something like this.
We do see you, dear,
The song you just heard was performed by the Tabernacle Choir and Orchestra at Temple Square with Norwegian and internationally acclaimed singer Sissel. This is considered one of the oldest of all Christmas songs, and it is appearing now on more and more albums by modern pop singers. The song itself comes from the 14th century, and it has an amazing backstory. Imagine this scene. A man of old, bent in prayer, weeping before God, asking for forgiveness for his many sins. His prayer to him was ineffectual. He did not feel any better about himself after it was over. In fact, he was in great despair. He climbed into bed, fearful of having another sleepless night over his worries about his salvation. He fell asleep, and to his great surprise, a vision was opened to his mind. Now, this is a true story. He received a heavenly visitation. An angel of glory and indescribable beauty told him, just as an angel had told the shepherds of the Bible, to fear not and be of good cheer. Then the angel took this man by the hand and invited him to cast off his sorrows and his guilt and to join the angel in a dance of rejoicing and worship. The song they danced to was the song that you just heard. Such was the most common form of worship in early Christian faith. Most music known as carols were songs of joyful dance that were intended not only to celebrate Christmas, but to teach of Christ and Him crucified. That song and others were known and used by the Pilgrims and the Puritans of America. That song is reflective of how the Puritans viewed Christmas, as opposed to their Pilgrim cousins to the South. Christmas to them was about self-improvement. It was about salvation through Christ. It was about rejoicing as the shepherds rejoiced when they received the good news of Christmas from the angels themselves. Historians love to make a great display, which gets repeated every year, of a famous public notice published in Boston proving, quote, the banishment of Christmas in New England. That has led to this idea that the Puritans celebrated Thanksgiving, but they didn't celebrate Christmas. It's a false idea. In fact, it has become so widely accepted that historians and journalists paint the picture today of a grim New England of old, completely devoid of Christmas entirely, and it's just not true. The first thing to remember was that the New World, and New England was a part of it, did not belong solely to the Puritans. There were plenty of regular Anglican pilgrims among them, or even folks who were just agnostic or atheists. Why? Well, they were needed. They were craftsmen and farmers and blacksmiths, men and women of talent and abilities needed to make a new colonial settlement thrive. There was also great religious diversity, even among the Puritan settlements of Connecticut and Massachusetts. This is the first clue that there's something more to the idea that Christmas was banned. Another clue comes in the fact that the first Puritans to arrive at Plymouth Rock came in 1620. The so-called famous ban didn't happen until 1659, nearly 40 years later. Well, what happened? Did the Puritans celebrate Christmas for those nearly four decades? Logic suggests that maybe they did. After all, if it had to be banned, it must have been celebrated. William Bradford, governor of the struggling settlement, himself recorded an incident in the early history of the colony when he chastised some locals for idle play on Christmas Day. Well, why were they idle if Christmas wasn't observed? The truth of the matter is that Christmas was a thing in Puritan New England, and it is time for historians to get behind the idea of Christmas in Puritan New England by looking at the well-established facts. It was observed. It just wasn't observed in the old English way in Massachusetts and Connecticut. The Pilgrims at Jamestown clung to some of the old English ways of celebrating Christmas. The record is clear of mistletoe and holly in the churches and gunfire and drinking in the streets of Jamestown, just as in merry old England of yore. Thank you. what was Christmas in England of the 1500s and 1600s? In the first half of the 17th century, Christmas was an important religious festival and at a time when the English population would indulge in a variety of traditional pastimes. The 25th of December was a public holiday, during which all places of work closed and people attended special church services. The next 11 days included additional masses with businesses open sporadically and for shorter hours than usual. During these 12 days of Christmas, buildings were dressed with rosemary, holly, and ivy, and families attended the Christmas Day Mass. As well as marking the day's religious elements, there was also nonstop dancing, singing, drinking, exchanging of presents, and stage plays. The population indulged in feasts of roast beef, plum porridge, mince pies, and special ale. Twelfth night, the final day of celebration, often saw a fresh round of feasting and carnivals. It's no surprise that the daily celebrations often led to drunkenness, promiscuity, gambling, and other forms of excess among some groups. 16th and 17th century Puritans frowned on what they saw as a frenzy of disorder and disturbance. Clearly to them, the festival of Christmas was not kept the same by everyone, and they were worse for the wear because of that. Ringing in their ears were the words of the song we just listened to. Deeply we are stained, but thou hast gained. Oh, that we were there. Christmas, to the Puritans, was a season to become, well, purified. In the late 1500s, Philip Stubbs, a strict Protestant, expressed the Puritan view on Christmas in his book, The Anatomy of Abuses, this way, quote, "More mischief in that time committed than in all the year besides, what dicing and carding, what drinking and eating, what banqueting and feasting is then used to the great dishonor of God and the impoverishing of the realm." Puritans were on a mission to improve themselves, not only in their ventures in a new world that would allow them to self-govern as they saw according to their religion, but also as individuals. They were determined to repent of their sins and lead a pure life. That's why they were called Puritans. They called for an examination of all their methods in living, and Christmas was just one of those. They argued that nowhere in the Bible had God called upon his people to celebrate the nativity in this manner, with decorations of holly, irreverent songs, and sinful behavior. Surely they were better than that. The Puritans espoused a stricter observance of Sunday, the Lord's Day, along with banning the immoral celebration of Christmas, as well as Easter, Whitsun, and Saints' Days, preferring to call the period Christtide and thus removing the Catholic Mass element. The Puritans reasoned that it should remain only as a day of fasting and prayer, a sacred celebration. So the establishment of Plymouth Colony brought with it a different kind of Christmas, but Christmas nonetheless. And for nearly 40 years, the Puritans attempted to celebrate and establish as tradition in America a more quiet Christmas, at least, and a more giving Christmas to those in need.
Masters in this hall, hear ye news today, brought from oversea, and ever I do pray. Over the hills, through the milk white snow, over the ewes bleat, while the wind did blow.
Thank you.
This song, called Masters in This Hall, is a lesser-known song of Christmas that embraces the Puritan ideals of Christmas charity. The carol describes a poor man drawing his master's attention to the birth of Christ by describing how he had met shepherds traveling to Bethlehem and that he had traveled with them. There he witnessed for himself the Christ child in the arms of his mother. The chorus repeats how the birth of Christ has raised up the poor and cast down the proud. The slow abolishment of Christmas in Massachusetts came from an entirely different way of seeing Christmas that most of the English world had long since abandoned. But in the setting of the New World, the Puritans were trying first to teach it from the pulpit instead of legislating it by law. Force, you see, was not working in England. A key to understanding the so-called ban of Christmas that came later lies in the very word colony. In other words, both Puritans and Pilgrims alike were still British subjects and connected at the hip with England in nearly everything, including Christmas. What that meant was that whatever was going on in England was going to happen as well in the New World. Sometimes the colonies didn't want to do things the way that it was done in the motherland. The long story of the American Revolution was, in fact, that those living in the Americas were going to go about things their own way, or else. The Puritans stubbornly stuck to that approach for nearly 40 years before they were forced to take up the ways of Christmas enforcement and banishment in England. Christmas, you see, was at the heart of the British Civil War in the mid-1600s. The Puritans of England fought against Charles I and his mission to control nearly every aspect of their lives, not only as their king, but as head of the Church of England. Charles felt that he was divinely endowed with that power and authority, and the English Puritans were just not having it, and the country fell into chaos for years as a result. Now, you need to realize this is a very personal part of the story to me. The patriarch of my family that came to America as a result of the British struggle over Christmas and the war that raged there for years over it is someone I know about. My 10th great-grandfather, a Puritan residing and fighting in southwest England, did what many desperate Puritan families did during the 1620s. They fled to the Netherlands. Not seeing much hope for the old world, my grandfather Gabriel looked to the new world and strategized to get his family there somehow. He would send his children one by one until eventually all the family would be there. First to go was his eldest daughter Jane at the age of 16. She arrived in the new world and within a year or two was married. Next to go was his 11-year-old son Jonas Westover. Can you imagine what it must have taken to put a child like that on a ship alone? But Jonas came to the New World and established himself in the ideal of the new American man, a product of Puritan resolve to make a better world in the Americas. Jonas never saw his family again. By the time the British Civil War played out, his family returned to Britain, and Jonas and his sister were the only members of the family who made it here. In the years ahead, the Puritans of England and the Puritans of America would take different approaches to life and to Christmas, and my ancestors were among them on both sides. The Puritans of England were led by Oliver Cromwell, a statesman and general responsible for leading the parliamentary army during the English Civil War, and they took over England in 1645. Supported by his Puritan forces, Cromwell believed it was his mission to cleanse the country of decadence, including Christmas. In 1644, he enforced an act of Parliament banning Christmas celebrations in England. Christmas was regarded by the English Puritans as a wasteful festival that threatened core Christian beliefs. Consequently, all activities relating to Christmas, including attending Mass, were forbidden. Not surprisingly, the ban was hugely unpopular, and many people continued to celebrate Christmas in England secretly. Oliver Cromwell regarded Charles I as an insurgent and a secret Catholic who was subverting the Protestant faith. The Stuart King was deposed and executed by Cromwell in 1649, and for the next 4 years, England was run by Parliament. But Cromwell also had other plans. He regarded the current system as ineffective and damaging to the country. Supported by the army, on the 20th of April, 1653, he led a body of musketeers to Westminster and forcibly expelled Parliament. He then established himself as Lord Protector and moved in to the Palace of Whitehall. The Puritans believed that you would be welcomed into heaven as long as you worked hard in your lifetime. Thus, enjoyment for enjoyment's sake was highly disapproved of. England during this time would be crushed into submission of Cromwell's will of not really enjoying yourself. Cromwell ordered for inns and playhouses to be shut down. Most sports were banned, and those caught swearing, well, they would receive a fine. Women caught working on the Sabbath would be put in stocks. They had to wear long black dresses, a white apron, a white headdress, and no makeup. The men were equally sober in appearance, dressed head to toe in black and sporting very short hair. All shops and markets were to stay open throughout the 25th of December, and anyone caught holding or attending a special Christmas church service would suffer a penalty. In the city of London, things were even stricter, as soldiers were ordered to patrol the streets, seizing any food they discovered was being prepared for a Christmas celebration. Now, despite imposing such rigid measures on the common people, it appears that Cromwell himself didn't quite live up to everything that he was preaching. He loved music, playing bowls, and hunting, and after becoming Lord Protectorate, he soon took to the high life. For his daughter's wedding, he even permitted a lavish feast and entertainment fit for royalty. In 1656, legislation was passed to ensure that Sundays were more stringently observed as the Lord's Day, and thus a day of rest. The regular monthly fast day had always been hugely unpopular and impossible to enforce and was subsequently dissolved. Despite the threat of fines and punishment, many people continued to celebrate Christmas clandestinely. That was evidenced by how the colonies in the New World responded to what was happening in England with all of this stuff. The Puritans in New England sided with Cromwell and worked to purify the days of their calendar and the activities of their daily lives, but they weren't going to be quite as heavy-handed about it. After all, the divisions in America were far more diverse than those divisions in England. England was divided by faith. America was a melting pot of nationalities and was divided by multiple types of faith, traditions, and languages. The Pilgrims of Jamestown, some 500 miles south as the crow flies, resisted the radical reforms of Cromwell entirely. After all, they weren't there to become saints. They were there to partake of the riches of the New World. Jamestown continued to celebrate Christmas with gunfire, street demonstrations, and occasionally the bawdiness of what they knew the English Christmas to be. But for Massachusetts colony, and less so in Connecticut, which was another hub of Puritan population, the celebration of Christmas encouraged was only along sacred lines. It was a church and worship affair. Meanwhile, the ban of Christmas in England had never been popular, even among those who liked to keep it subdued. Many people still held Mass on the 25th of December to mark Christ's nativity. In the late 1640s, Cromwell tried to put a stop to these public celebrations and force businesses to stay open. As a result, violent encounters took place between supporters and opponents of Christmas in many towns, including London, Canterbury, and Norwich. Cromwell was Lord Protector until his death in 1658, whereby Charles II was enthusiastically welcomed back to England to take the throne as the country's rightful heir. When Cromwell died, the Puritans of Massachusetts colony knew things were going to change in the motherland of England, and thus likely then for them. They needed to quickly catch up somehow to what Cromwell was doing about Christmas, or face the consequences of a Christmas made wild again on their very streets. So they rushed to extend and finally to enforce the Cromwell bans of Christmas officially in the colony of Massachusetts Bay. After all, the Puritan majority in the New World saw firsthand what the traditions of Christmas meant to those who were not Puritan among them. With Cromwell gone, the ranks of the non-Puritans would only swell in the New England of the future. The American Puritan community also knew that the nightmares of the rowdy Christmas in England were on full display in the streets of settlements in the New World that were not under Puritan control. Quote, "Men dishonor Christ more in the 12 days of Christmas than in all the 12 months besides," wrote 16th century clergyman Hugh Latimer. With the restoration of the monarchy in 1661, Oliver Cromwell was once more a despised figure. Cromwell was originally buried with great ceremony in Westminster Abbey, a famous Gothic church in London that houses the tombs of kings and queens dating back to Edward the Confessor, as well as countless memorials to distinguished English subjects. Upon taking the throne, Charles II, first orders were to exhume Cromwell's lifeless body and take it to be hung at Tyburn Gallows at the top of Hyde Park near Marble Arch in London. With this news, the Puritans of New England had to know their law against Christmas was doomed almost as soon as it was enacted. The prohibition of public Christmas celebration was unique to Massachusetts in the New World, and under the reign of King Charles II, political pressure from the motherland steadily increased for the colony's Puritan leaders to relax their intolerant laws or risk losing their royal charter. In 1681, 22 years later, the Massachusetts Bay Colony reluctantly repealed its most odious laws, including, finally, the ban on Christmas. But 22 years of declaring the English Christmas a heathen practice did the trick in subduing the celebration of Christmas in New England and extending the misconceptions of Christmas among the Puritans even to this day. But despite this tug of war in the history books about Christmas in New England, there survives plenty of evidence that Christmas was celebrated at that time and was, in fact, celebrated in different ways by the Puritans of New England. I can trace my family history back to the Mayflower. I have found between the various lines of my father's and my mother's family trees 11 individuals who came over on the Mayflower that I'm related to. Like many this year who are commemorating the arrival of the Mayflower 400 years ago, I want to know and understand their lives and by extension, their celebrations of Christmas. The Puritan Christmas was very real. They marked the day. They observed Christmas as a religious holiday. That much is evident in the personal records they left behind. In conducting research on one particular ancestor that I might share in a future episode of the Merry Little Podcast about Halloween and the witch trials of New England in the 17th century, I was interested to find some precious detail about a woman who is my 9th great-grandmother. She was once accused of being a witch during that time period. She never went to trial, and I have yet to learn what the accusations precisely were against her. But the hysteria of the time about witches was something she briefly got caught up in. Her record of what transpired, scant as it was, gave one tiny morsel of detail that probably doesn't matter to anyone but me. She merely wrote that whatever the event was that caused her to be accused of being a witch happened at Christmas time. Those are her exact words. Now, why would an obscure Puritan woman of 1662 mention Christmas if indeed Christmas wasn't observed at all? As I researched the many different families who make up my ancestry in Connecticut during the 1600s, it is clear that Christmas was an event and not the blanket banned holiday that historians seem to spout about. In those areas where Puritans did not have a majority to control houses of Commonwealth government in pre-Revolution years of the American colonies, Christmas continued as it was celebrated in England, and it was an out-of-control event that continued for decades in most of America's largest cities. The American culture of Christmas in the 1700s is steeped in a huge annual holiday that everyone then collectively called Christmas, and yet the growing melting pot of America saw many different kinds of ways to keep Christmas. It is a fascinating study in American history as well as in the history of Christmas. Thank goodness for the modern-day resources that we find at places like newspapers.com and genealogybank.com, where we can continue to verify these facts through the archives of the primitive media of the time. Pick a location where a publication was made, and you will easily find clear references to the colonial Christmas and the trouble that it sometimes caused. In fact, the very beginnings of Santa Claus in America was the direct result of the chaos of Christmas, another tale in the story of Christmas in America that we'll save for another episode. If, in this year of Mayflower celebration, you get the urge to find your roots dating back to that time, it is a little work, but it is well worth the effort. We encourage you to visit FamilySearch.org and add the information of yourself and your parents to that one world tree. It's a free thing to do, and it is the first step in finding your connections to your Puritan or Pilgrim past. It's taken me more than 20 years to find out what I know, and yet people today are, thanks to technology, able to find these roots so much faster now than in the past. In fact, if you get your data connected to the tree that has been building now for decades at FamilySearch, you can then visit a website called RelativeFinder.org and see within seconds not only your connections to the Mayflower, but to generations of the famous and influential in American history. You'll learn not only about your family past in so doing, but also about your family's Christmas past. Join us at the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com, where we celebrate the modern Christmas and the great American traditions of Thanksgiving with a grateful nod to our Puritan and Pilgrim ancestry. For all of us at My Merry Christmas, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.